What's up, you little bat freaks? Welcome back to another installment of Radio Vision. This is episode 23. I am your host, John Swanathan Parker, and joining me, as always, is my lovely co-host, sidekick, patcher up of you know, wounds that I receive on the Gotham City streets, maker of vichyssoise soup, all kinds of stuff, the Alfred, as it were, Mr. Zach Rotello. Zach, how's it going?
Ba-dum, bum, ba-bum. Ba-bum, bum, ba-bum.
Welcome to Terminator Cast.
I'm good. How's your day going, buddy?
It's good. It's good. We are still doing Batman stuff, man. Not sick of it yet, are you?
No, definitely not. In fact, we're starting to get to glass half empty sort of territory where I'm like going to start thinking of, like, you know, every single episode of this we do is just going to be that, like, Sarah McLachlan song is like, in the arms of the angels. And I start looking back at all the episodes and they flash behind me.
We're going to get close to the end and we're going to be cherishing every last minute that we can. And if you're wondering what the heck that is all about, it's because we are reviewing every episode of Batman, the animated series. We are watching these in production order, which is the order that the creators intended. It's available on Wikipedia and Vudu and Amazon in the volumes, as well as the Blu-rays itself. You can also check it out on HBO Max or just Max, as it is known now. And we've just been, you know, watching these for the better part of a year and a half. We are over 60 episodes into Batman the Animated Series, and we are loving it. I mean, we've covered a lot of ground. It's actually, I was listening to our Ra's al Ghul pod that we did 2 weeks ago, and I was like, man, we got the formatting down, feeling comfortable. You know, it's just like, it feels like it's like putting on the most comfortable pair of shoes that you have every week. You know, it's just nice.
Yes. It's funny how the show has definitely, I mean, it's definitely evolved over time. So thank you for anybody out there that's been listening to us since we started doing Radio Vision with Batman. Sure. It's been a really fun series. It's been just a cool dichotomy, like having like, and I actually think that that's going to be a constant with this show going forward, and like how the concept goes is like, I like that you have like the expertise and like the familiarity with it. And then like someone like me is coming on board and learning a thing or two. So yeah. It's cool. Like, and we've been like all the segments, how they've changed. And you know, when we get to the end of this long road, I'm sure we'll do some kind of like retrospective on everything.
That is on the calendar. Yeah. Maybe some type of like fun little games in there, including, you know, our own little Oscar show. I would love to do a draft of some kind. We always love doing those, you know, bring Cal on or something like that. But yeah, I mean, it's been quite the journey. And if you haven't listened to every single episode and you'd like to check that out, you know, head over to our website, radiovania.com. We are a spinoff of Radiovania, which is a nerd podcast that Zach and I have been doing for the better part of 8 years now, 9 years almost. We'll have a 10-year anniversary here pretty soon next year in 2025, which is exciting.
Good fucking God.
Yeah. If I give a time in a bottle. And if you want to see how young we used to be, you can go to YouTube and search Radiovania, and you can see all the YouTube videos that we made when we were in college, and even
now
some more recent than that.
Now we're just old men waiting to die alone.
Exactly. And if you have any comments or, you know, things about Radio Vision, about Batman the Animated Series, or just stuff that you'd like to send to Radiovania, the show as a whole, you can send it to radiovaniashow@gmail.com. And check us out on Instagram, Radiovania Show, where Zach notifies you when new episodes are coming in, which is awesome. So, Zach, this week we have a plethora of episodes to talk about. Three is normal, and the episodes are His Silicon Soul, Fire from Olympus, and Read My Lips. So if you guys haven't watched those yet, pause this episode, go check it out, and then come back so you can listen to our in-depth discussion, because we go full spoilers the whole way. It's a big old choo-choo train going back to the station. So.
Choo-choo! First episode in weeks that we haven't had like a two-parter or like an overarching. These are like three. It's the first time that we've had three like,
yeah, we're done with
episodes
two-parters
that are kind of all over the place here. So
yeah, we talked about that with the Demon's Quest. That was the last two-parter on the docket going forward. So we do have a couple of movies coming up. So, you know, Sub-Zero is in about 6 to 7 episodes of Radio Vision. So, you know, that's about 6 to 8 weeks, depending on our personal schedules. And, you know, if you want to start formulating things, we had a lot of emails sent for Mask of the Phantasm when we did the 30th anniversary for that. We're not going to structure it as in-depth as that because there's no anniversary for Sub-Zero this year. However, it is a big movie to talk about within the confines of the show. And if you have anything that you'd like to share, you know, hit up radiomaniashow@gmail.com. Send those things your way. If you love Mr. Freeze, that is going to be the Mr. Freeziest Freeze pod you could ever imagine. So
nice to see you.
Not that kind of Mr. Freeze. The good Mr. Freeze.
So the Sub-Zero came out March 17th, 1998, which was 25 years, 10 months, and one day ago. So
we missed it by a little bit. Yeah.
We missed it by a bit, but this March will be the 26th anniversary.
Pretty exciting.
So
March I think is that we probably should... about the time that it'll come out. So that's not bad.
Well, we can call it that if it's like, now the special 26th anniversary of Batman Sub-Zero.
Sure. But in the meantime, we're going to dive into these episodes here. Again, we're going to go episode by episode, talk about each one in depth, rank it in an overall rankings, and then we'll head on back to the Batcave, get some sleep, and then do it all again the next night. So, Zach, are you ready to dive on in?
Ready to roll.
All right, our first episode tonight is His Silicon Soul. This is written by Marty Eisenberg and Robert Skur. So there you go. Marty! And it's directed by Boyd Kirkland. Director Boyd Kirkland is a guy we've been talking about a lot lately.
Yes, we have. Boyd Kirkland. We've written his credits quite a bit. He's coming up, Batman and Freeze Sub-Zero. He was the director on that project, but he's also done 21 episodes of Batman the Animated Series, including episodes that we've watched like It's Never Too Late, Joker's Favor, Pretty Poison, The Forgotten, Perchance to Dream, Beware the Grey Ghost, one of our favorites,
Love that one.
Joker's Wild, Harley and Ivy, and he also, this week, will also be directing Read My Lips. So,
yeah,
we've got the two for this week. We got
Double Kirkland.
Double the Kirk, double
Kirkland
the fun.
Special.
He's got that $1.50 dog in him.
Yeah. Did you see that guy that ate the hot dog for every meal in a week?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
The Costco combo meal, $1.50, three square meals a day, hot dog and a soda for 7 days. He says his bowel movements were just like absolutely atrocious, but he only spent like $60 on food in a week, which these days is pretty good.
That's pretty fucking good. Didn't he say he like lost weight too?
Yeah.
I'm down. Let's do it, baby.
It's kind of like the fight milk, and it's always sunny. It just makes you expel all bodily fluids. Yeah. So that's probably why you lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, that's probably true.
He's also sweating all the time from only eating hot dogs.
Oh my God, dude. If I did the hot dog diet,
so
can you imagine what your farts would smell like?
That should be our fantasy punishment next year. It's the Costco hot dog diet for a week.
I'm in. For a week? How about a month? Let's try a month.
A month? That's not healthy.
You're allowed one salad.
That's a good idea. Yeah. But it's got hot dogs chopped up on it.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, title card for His Silicon Soul. We got a creepy Terminator robotic arm reading for the silhouette of our Batman friend here. What are your thoughts on this?
Love it. I think this one's really cool. I liked how
it looks cool. It's good. It'd be a cool shirt. It looks like
it would be a cool shirt.
Like a Metallica album cover or something.
Yeah. I like how minimalist it is. Like the white outline, at least I was watching it on the TV here with the lights off, and it's just this dark subdued red and the outline of Batman and then the metal hand, but then the white font is like the brightest fucking thing on the planet.
Yeah, it's really cool. Pops.
I thought it was a very cool title card.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I'm going to dive into our 2-minute plot synopsis here for this episode. Ready to go?
I'm ready to go. Sorry, I was checking on, we're in fourth quarter of Bills Chiefs.
That's right. There's football still going on.
Yeah, Bills are winning 24-20.
Okay. Is Taylor there?
Taylor is there. They've showed her multiple. Travis Kelce caught a touchdown. They immediately panned to her.
Thanks for nothing, Travis.
He did this up to her box when he scored the touchdown. God.
That's adorable.
Also, I read in a news article that there's some food company in the Buffalo Bills Stadium that's selling two Taylor Swift themed food items at the Buffalo Stadium. So if you're lucky enough to go, you can get, I think it was a karma quesadilla. And
that sounds good.
And something else.
That's amazing. Karma quesadilla.
Yeah.
All right, here's the synopsis for his Silicon Soul. On a stormy night, the Cybertron warehouse is robbed by some thieves hoping to capitalize on a big payday for fencing some computer equipment. They find one crate with the Hardak symbol. Hardak is a sentient AI, as seen in Heart of Steel, Part 1 and Part 2. And they attempt to pry it open. Suddenly, Batman emerges from the crate and defeats all the thieves except for one, who unloads a pistol into this Batman. Batman looks down at the wounds and see he is robotic on the inside, taking no damage. It's just a flesh wound.
You ain't human.
Batman stumbles home and seeks the aid of Alfred, who is horrified at the sight of Batman with his gut blasted open and metal wiring hanging out. Jim and Batman meet at the Cybertron warehouse, where Batman is a little perplexed as to why these criminals are seemingly caught by himself. Back at Wayne Manor, Alfred attempts to tell quote-unquote Batman that he is a duplicate, and the robot has no idea what he's talking about. Which, by the way, this whole episode is my worst nightmare. Imagine, like, another Jonathan comes to visit you, and it's just, like, convinced that he's Jonathan. That's terrifying.
How about Alfred... a game of miniatures, Zach?
How about The Last of Us?
Do you Alfred remember that one?
Alfred flees into the cave and tries to trap the robot. Unfortunately, the robot Batman gets the better of him and then explores the bad computer to learn more about what a duplicate is, as well as if there are any others. He then asks the computer about his creator, a man named Rossum. Batman visits Rossum first and asks if Hardak could have created a Batman duplicate. If you remember in Heart of Steel, there was like a Jim Gordon duplicate and a mayor duplicate and all that kind of stuff. Rossum says no and asks Batman to leave him in peace. He's just a humble farmer now, kind of like Galen Erso in Rogue One. He's like, fucking don't bother me. Shortly after, Robot Batman visits Rossum as well and wants to find Hardak. Real Batman never left, however, and ambushes the machine version. Robot Batman escapes, and Batman saves Rossum from a collapsing building. I'm saying Batman a lot on this one. Robot Batman finds the last known remains of Hardak and is forced to upload Hardak's backup files into the mainframe of Robot Batman. Hardak's first target is to replace the duplicate. To replace Batman with the duplicate itself. That was his primary directive, was to replace all people with the duplicates to make the world a better place. Hardak ambushes Batman and seemingly defeats him. At the Batcave, Hardak attempts to download the Hardak program into the Batcomputer, which would lead to a worldwide computer assimilation. Batman arrives and starts to manipulate Hardak into questioning its own programming. Since Hardak has Batman's memories, he may also have his empathy for life, and Hardak knocks Batman over the cliff's edge and immediately starts to rage over his mistake of accidentally taking a life. This outrage causes a fire, and it douses the fire in sprinklers, which also shuts down the robot. Batman emerges from the chasm and asks Alfred if he believes that that robot had a soul after all. Here we go. Robot Batman, Hardak, Robot Batman, Batman.
Robo.
So this is our second foray into Batman versus AI, his Silicon Soul being a direct sequel for Heart of Steel Part 1 and Part 2.
Technically third, because isn't there the Riddler episode where they fight AI in the computer?
I thought that was VR.
Was that VR?
Yeah.
Certainly there's a component of AI.
There's a little bit of AI in there for sure. Yeah, but good point. I guess I meant directly involving Hardak and the Rossum duplicates, which is essentially Blade Runner Batman with replicants and stuff.
Yeah.
What did you think, though?
What I think? I like this episode a lot. I thought that the horror vibes of the opening really set a cool tone.
Very cool. Cool opening.
Yeah.
When he just punches his way out of the crate. Yeah.
Rad. I loved the shadowing and the darkness of the warehouse that they're in, and like the kind of fear in the eyes of the criminals as they're trying to deal with this Terminator. And that whole thing, like, really I thought was really, really cool. I was a little bit confused. I mean, you know, we review all these episodes, so not that they're blurring together, but there were moments that I forgot about. They really don't touch on, like, when they go to the guy that's in the when they go to see the farmer, I was like, who is this man? I was like,
yeah.
I was like, I don't remember this at all. I couldn't remember it, but you saying, like, it puts it in context of, like, oh, he was the guy from the Hardak thing from it was Heart of Steel, right? That was the episode.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that puts this into so much more context, because I was like, this must be something that I don't know, like, lore wise, but it's from a previous episode, and that checks out. But yeah, I really liked the horror vibes Shout out lightning. Lots of really cool lightning effects.
Yeah,
in this,
very
in
cool.
This episode.
Yeah, illumination of stuff for sure.
Yeah, I liked the episode quite a bit. I mean, overt, you know, Terminator vibes. Also, Tron. I was reminded of the Tron legacy with Russell Wilson. What's that actor's name?
Tron Legacy.
Jeff Bridges.
Not Russell Wilson. Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges. Awesome. Where it's like him and his younger counterpart, and it's like his AI counterpart, and he thinks he's the real one and stuff like that. So I thought it was cool. I thought it explored some really interesting themes. I liked the ending quite a bit too. I liked the Batman duping him by using his own emotionalism against him. I thought that was a really compelling ending.
Very like clever. Batman is always a detective first way of like kind of overthinking and outwitting his opponents and stuff like that too, which I think is pretty rad.
Yeah, it was rad. What did you think?
I like this one quite a bit. I'm trying to find the cast because the guy I wanted to plug in that the guy who plays Rossum is in Blade Runner.
Really?
Yep. Carl Rossum is modeled on the Blade Runner character JF Sebastian, who is also a roboticist portrayed by William Sanderson, the actor. Oh. So he's the voice of Rossum and he plays Sebastian in the original Blade Runner directed by Ridley Scott. So fun little plug there.
Well, how about that?
But yeah, I agree. Like the monster Terminator horror elements of it is really cool. I think the hard act Batman design is really cool too, where like he takes the cowl off and it's like full Terminator. He puts it back on. He's fine. He's got like a skin mask. I just sent you in the chat. There is a hard act robot Batman hero click, which is really cool. The only one that I don't have actually from the set. It's pretty hard to get, but
it's cool. I does he have like,
he has a metal like half of a face.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I can kind of see that in the image you sent, the thumbnail. But
yeah, it's kind of hard to tell. But
yeah, I love like him and Wayne Manor when he's like, Master Bruce, you gave me quite a scare. And then like the light hits him in a specific way, and he's got like metal coming out of him.
I know.
Alfred's like, Roar! And he, like,
yeah, it kind of reminded me of like Terminator Salvation, where it's like Sam Worthington doesn't know that he's a Terminator. Spoilers for Terminator Salvation, but Sam Worthington's a Terminator.
About that. Terminator Salvation. No one cares about that movie anymore.
I like that movie. It's my third favorite Terminator movie.
Not that it's not as bad. That's one of those movies that it's not as bad as everyone says.
That movie got the mid 2000s Christian Bale bump, where it's like that dude couldn't do anything wrong, and like Christian Bale is John Connor. Great casting. Regardless of that, though, I enjoyed this episode quite a bit. In terms of like, it's not like you don't really have to overthink anything too much. Obviously, if you had just watched Heart of Steel, it might serve you a little bit better with the Rossum character, but that doesn't really matter. Like, it's mostly not even focused on Hardak specifically. It's this one duplicant that is going rogue and essentially going on what Deckard goes on in Blade Runner, which is pretty funny.
Wait a second. Duplicant?
That's what they call him. Yeah.
They call him a duplicant.
Yeah. Duplicants.
In the episode, they verbally say duplicant.
You're a duplicant.
I remember that. That's a great word. Duplicant.
It's a replicant ripoff.
Literally a ripoff of Blade Runner. That's hysterical.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel you. I like the episode quite a bit. I mean the idea of, you know, to touch on like maybe it would have come, like you said, maybe coming off of Heart of Steel and then watching this right afterwards, maybe I would have made the connections in my head a little bit better or more closely. But what I really liked is the moments of like Robo Batman, like the duplicate Batman that's struggling with like figuring out like what he is and not knowing what he is. Is he real? Is he fake? And then there's like he keeps looking over in reflective surfaces and seeing that robotic symbol. And I really like that like subtle,
very, very cool,
very, very subtle effect that I thought was very mature. Again, I think this episode struggles. This episode wrestles with a lot of very complicated, mature themes about, it doesn't push them very far, but it like, what is reality? Are you real? Could, you know, what you do when you have to face somebody that's yourself, like, it's really, really,
if you're a clone or a replicant of somebody, do you share all of their traits that make them who they are? Like Batman's whole heroic like purpose is justice through vengeance without murder, and for this robot whose prime directive is to assimilate all these people with robots, there would be violence required. And he'd like, it just like becomes a conundrum with the program, and then he can't get past, which is pretty sweet. But
well, you said that this is your biggest fear. Is this legitimately a big John Parker?
I think it's freaky.
Fear?
I think it's really freaky. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, if like
to be on which end, you seem to you're more scared of being on the end where you suddenly see a clone of yourself and you're like, who am I? Like, which one am I?
Yeah.
That's scary.
That would be fucked up.
Rather than waking up one day and thinking that you're the clone.
I would rather, yeah. Like, what would bother me is, like, let's say I came home from work and there was another me already here, right? And I was like, well, which one is the original? Is it the one that stayed home or the one that went to work? Because if I made a clone of myself, I'd for sure send him to work. But what if the cloning happened while I was away at work? You know, it's a whole thing that we're going to have to do another podcast for sometime.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think being assimilated by AI is kind of freaky.
Did you ever watch Duel?
No.
So it's an okay movie. I didn't like love it, but it's hold on. I got to grab the cast real quick. It won't be a long tangent. It's a Karen Gillan movie with Aaron Paul. And the premise of the movie is that Karen Gillan, it's actually kind of a cool little sci-fi movie. It's an hour and 30 minutes, so you're in, you're out. It doesn't really matter. But it's kind of like a long episode of The Twilight Zone. But basically, in this movie, Karen Gillan finds out that she has terminal cancer. But in the future world that this takes place in, you can undergo a procedure to clone yourself so that it doesn't make it, like, for your family's sake and friends, so that if you might die, that your clone would live on in your place. And it's a really costly thing. And by hook or crook, right, she goes through this process of getting a clone, and then she finds out that she goes into remission and her cancer's healed. And so now it's her and this clone, and they got to figure out what to do about it. And
that's cool.
It's an interesting concept, but yeah, I mean, this one doesn't quite touch on that level of maturity. It's just like Batman is like, well, there's another one of me running around, Jim. What are we going to do?
Yeah, you know, I think the concept of like cloning and stuff like that, like I think the Prestige, you know, personally handles it the best, where it's like, it's a Faustian bargain where you're splitting your soul by creating life in an unorthodox way. And there shouldn't be two of you existing, right? Because they're the exact same. And you know, what the great Denton has to deal with is pretty impressive. Go check out the Prestige.
I didn't know if he'd be the man in the box or the man taking the bow.
Just a great Danton enjoyed taking his bows under the stage. What was your favorite cell of animation in this one?
Shout out to choose from. There's a lot to choose from. I liked a lot of this stuff.
These back half episodes look really good.
They do look very good.
We should say that. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I like the opening quite a bit. With him punching through the thing and like that, like the scariness of the opening sequence of these guys like hunting down Robo Batman, but. My favorite shot I'm going to give to the award of the one that gave me the biggest laugh actually this week, which was Alfred. I just wrote my notes for Radiovision. My note, Alfred get wrecked with electricity. He goes to like the counter and he's like, and he like hits it or whatever. And it's like sat back. I was like, Alfred's dead. I was like, he's dead. He's gone.
He's for sure fried.
He's absolutely fried. He's medium rare. I don't know what happened there, but yeah, that shot just made me laugh quite a bit, so I'm gonna go with that.
That's a good one.
What about you?
Mine is also comical. It is Hardak Robot Batman trying to not put the computer chip in his head, right. And he's like trying not to, and he's straining. I think it's pretty funny, but it also just looks really cool. Like, I think they did a good job designing the robot. It's very minimal.
Yeah,
gets the point across, you know.
And I was thinking about this too, like when he goes to insert that chip and he does insert it, I was like, I bet that felt good. Like, imagine that's sure. Like, what, whenever I have like bad headaches or a migraine after a long day or whatever, I'm like, I just kind of want to like put, like, I feel like there's like, if I was a robot, I'm just missing a little chunk of piece, like a little data piece that I can just put right back in. And I'm like, all right, I feel better now.
Yeah.
Do you want some trivia?
Yeah, please give me some trivia.
Really quickly, we've got a couple trivia facts here. Of course, I just to make sure everyone's aware, I get this trivia from IMDb. This is user submitted trivia, so sometimes it's legit and other times it's very not legit. And I'll
or
just
like
go
opinions
ahead.
And speculation. Yeah.
Yeah, I try to edit out the ones that are very editorialize. Let's just put it that way. So
thank you for that vetting.
Thank you. You're welcome. I don't know why I thanked myself. The exoskeleton is similar in style to Terminator 1984, including the way the artificial skin wraps around the head. The term duplicant is similar to replicant from Blade Runner, so you covered that already. Among the toys that are in Dr. Rossum's apartment are Batmite. You can see a little Batmite toy from the Batman comics of the 1960s. And Mr. Mixpultik, Superman's extra-dimensional foe from the same era. Did I pronounce that right or no?
You're close. No one really knows how to pronounce it. That's the point.
So it's like Rumpelstiltskin.
Some people say Mixpultik or something like that. I just call him Mixie. It's the easiest way to do it. This, you know, and they say it in the cartoons. There's a Superman the Animated Series episode with it. But yeah, him and Batmite are from the fourth dimension.
Got it.
Fifth dimension. Yeah,
you already read this off about William Sanderson. He's the voice of Carl Rossum, plays a similar character in Blade Runner as the creator of the replicants. And the name Rossum is an allusion to the 1921 play by RUR, which stands for Rossumovi Universalni Roboti, Rossum's Universal Robots.
That's really cool. There's some big theater, like sci-fi nerd action going on in Batman, I feel like.
Totally.
In these creators. I feel like they were all like just high as balls watching Blade Runner, and they're like, can we make a Blade Runner Batman episode? Probably.
And I think that I think they pulled it off. I think in terms of Batman Blade Runner, I don't know, this episode's pretty fucking good. So
yeah.
Did you have anything else on this, or do you want to rank it?
No, I didn't. Let's rank it. For those of you that are tuning in for the first time, we have tier systems to keep track because there's so many episodes now. We have officially ranked 61 episodes of Batman the Animated Series over, you know, a little over half. And the tier system is as follows. At the very top, we have our S tier. These are the cream of the crop. A tier, B tier, tier C, it's never too late tier, and tier basement. So there you go. We have all of our little systems there, from best to worst, as it were. Although I think there's enjoyment in every single episode that we've talked about.
Obviously. Go ahead and listen to the last 25 episodes to understand why we tiered them the way that we did.
Yeah, we can't tell you why it's never too late tier. You got to go do that digging yourself. It's kind of like an inside joke at this point. Did you have any gut reactions besides having cables coming out of your belly after discovering your robot?
No, in fact, I'm actually kind of conflicted because this is one of those classic, like, is it better or worse than On Leather Wings kind of episodes for me. Like, sure. I think that it could be an easy slot in for A tier, because there is a lot of really cool imagery and I think the themes that they play with are cool, but it's not, you know, from point A to point B to Z story here is just kind of straightforward. It's just the themes that they wrestle with that I think are actually pretty mature and cool and different for Batman. But in the end, like, it is kind of a schlocky episode about Batman getting, you know, a robo Batman double. So
yeah, there's a little bit too much time spent in like that greenhouse fight that could have been used for like some like self, you know, discovery for the for the robot Batman.
I think for the beginning and the end of this episode elevate it quite a bit, but the middle is kind of like, it's not anything out of the ordinary. Like, it kind of like, you know, Feet of Clay, Fear of Victory, Heart of Steel. It's kind of like I think it's better than Heart of Steel, but do I think it's better than On Leather Wings enough to nudge it into A? You know what I mean?
I personally agree with you. I think it's better. It's a better sequel. It's a good story for AI in a way that Heart of Steel like touched on, but didn't quite. Even over two episodes, like, it doesn't have as much of the cool imagery as this one does. And I really do love the idea of having the robot Batman. I think that's a cool concept. But I personally don't like it more than On Leather Wings. I think if anything, this should fit very comfortably as like the very top of B tier, where it's like I'm it's almost there at A tier, but it's just not, because of that second act, it's just not quite there. I feel like all of our A tier episodes are good all the way through, although not always perfect for like tiny minute things. This one has a decent chunk of it that isn't as like strong as the beginning and the end. So
I give special mention. I think it goes in the new number 33. I think that's a great pick. Something to mention though is that you did mention, like, you know, we put, you know, his silicon soul goes at the new number 33, but Heart of Steel Part 2 and Part 1 are both 40 and 41 respectively. Now, this episode does what both of those episodes I think wanted to do in a more succinct single 20-minute episode. And I think that that it alone is impressive. And it almost like, I'm not saying that it does, devalues Heart of Steel quite a bit in my book now. Because now I've seen how it can be done, and I think that that two-parter just kind of wasted a lot of its potential.
I also feel like our B tier is going to expand as time goes on, too. You know, that gap might become bigger, but I agree with you 100%. So, new number 33 out of 62. Not a bad place to be. Hard ack, if you're listening. All right,
real quick, be a clown. Yeah. That's the meme, right?
Yep.
Okay, good. Just wanted to double check because I was like, wait a second. I was like, why do we have a Joker episode down here? But then I realized, oh, yeah.
It's just not as good as some of
the others. Not as good.
Yeah. I think that's safely the worst Joker episode, and they're all fun. So, all right. Our next episode, and boy, I'm so excited to talk to you about this.
Oh, boy.
Fire from Olympus, written by Paul Dini. And Judith and Garfield Reeves Stevens, the writing duo, and directed by Dan Ribba. So Paul Dini, household name, co-creator of Harley Quinn, or sole creator of Harley Quinn, I should say, co-creator of a lot of things in Batman the Animated Series, well known for writing a lot of fan favorite episodes as well. We'll see how it works when he's in junction with these Reeves Stevens characters. But Zach, do you have any Dan Ribba?
Yeah, we've only talked about this guy a handful of times because he's directed only 10 episodes of the animated series. Most in this canon that we've done so far, he directed Zatanna. He directed Blind as a Bat, See No Evil, and now he's directing Fire from Olympus. He will go on to do one episode of season 2 and like 6 of season 3. He's also been a part of a lot of the other usual suspects, right? Superman, the animated series, Batman Beyond, Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, Ben 10, a bunch of animated stuff.
Very cool. Title card watch. We have our Iliad and Odyssey kind of font here. Not quite papyrus, but, you know, kind of like fun adventure-y thought. Font.
It was similar.
Yeah, similar. It was clearly the basis for it. And then we have this peaking mountain that is supposed to represent Olympus. I'm not a huge fan of this one, especially compared to the last one. It's just perfectly mediocre.
Totally, totally fine.
Kind of looks just like a transition image from Hercules, you know, which is cool. Love that movie. Check it out.
Like you can hear that, like kind of like coming in.
Yeah. Got some, I'm sure, facts that you'll bring up towards the end here, but I'll do my plot's synopsis first. All right. And then talk about Maxi Zeus's first appearance. All right, here we go. Jim Gordon is waiting in the Greek district of Gotham for an informant. Unfortunately, while en route to the meeting, the informant is ambushed by Hired Muscle. A mysterious man is enraged at this rat and punishes him for his transgressions. The informant, named Stavros, is in a coma after the nurses claim he was struck by lightning that night, which Gordon claims the weather was totally fine. Batman and Jim Gordon try to piece together how Stavros may have been involved with the theft electrical cannon prototype, since Stavros has a criminal history of tipping off gangs to shipment arrivals at the Gotham port. At a towering skyscraper, Maxi Zeus argues with his wife slash lawyer about his culpability in many of these recent crimes. Maxi believes he is a god, and Zeus specifically, and therefore above the law. Batman comes to visit Maxi to ask if Maxi knows about how these hijackers were able to steal the cannon, since Maxi owns the shipping company in Gotham that it arrived on. Maxi is outraged at Batman's inference that he is the criminal and demands that he leave Olympus. Batman visits Maxi's wife, Cleo, which, you know, I feel like Batman is trying to put the moves on Cleo, but that's, you know, personal. And he tells her that he wants to help. She claims that he started to mentally crack under pressure from the mob who was extorting him into making smuggling deals with them. Cleo then sneaks Batman back into the skyscraper. The GCPD send a blimp that flies too close to the tower, and Maxi unleashes the electrical cannon onto it. Batman fights his way to the top of the tower, and Maxi has Cleo strapped to the cannon, convinced that she will be reincarnated as his queen that will be truly loyal to him. Batman evades the machine gun fire from Maxi's harpies and saves Cleo before another cannon blast. Maxi Zeus is about to fire another blast onto the city, and Batman hurls the Thunderbolt Scepter into the cannon, causing it to explode. Maxi is then knocked out from the blast, and Batman escorts Cleo away. Maxi Zeus is then taken to Arkham, where he confuses the rest of Batman's rogues galleries for various gods and goddesses from Greek mythology, and Arkham for his new home, the true Mount Olympus. The end. Maxi Zeus's first appearance was in Detective Comics in, number 483 back in the late 70s. Zach, what did you think of Fire from Olympus and our guy Maxi Zeus?
Dude, I had no idea what the fuck was happening in this episode. And I was thoroughly confused at the very beginning because I saw Fire from Olympus and I was like, I was like, I immediately started thinking about like, oh, Themyscira. I was like, maybe we get some Wonder Woman action in this bitch.
Nope.
We get this dude that it totally is just out of his gourd, thinks that he's actually Zeus and is trying to take over the world and trying to kill this girl. Or
I think he's just like, I think he's just bipolar and he's just manic. He's just and he's like, he found this electrical cannon. And because he's Zeus, Zeus hurls thunderbolts down at the world, you know, in Greek mythology, whenever they displease him. So he's just like,
I'm Zeus.
Just going to start shooting stuff in Gotham City, you know?
Well, we'll touch on, if that's what this is, then we've got two episodes this week where we've got mental health issues that are in the clear forefront of Batman lore here.
Very interesting. Very interesting double feature.
We're
getting
into
the loons of the Gotham City Rogues Gallery now, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, they're like, all right, we've done Poison Ivy, we've done Joker. How about this guy that thinks he's fucking Zeus? Oh, that might work.
Maxi Zeus always has some really interesting comic appearances. Like, he's actually a gangster, like in some of the comics, and like has a gang. He's also a Riddle in a couple of the Arkham games, which is pretty fun. He's got his own lounge, the Olympus Lounge.
Okay, this is what I wanted to talk to you about, because like I didn't love this episode. I wasn't really digging this episode. I thought that it had some clever moments. I think the ending is really great.
The ending is awesome. That's the best part of the episode.
The ending is stellar, but the whole time I'm like, what is happening? Why is he doing this? Who is this person? I've never heard of this fucking Batman character. And, you know, I played Arkham, so maybe he was a riddle or a clue or something. I just totally forgot about it, but... what you as a Batman, a super lore DCU fan, I mean, like, what did you think about this episode? Who is this fucking person? I was just like, what is happening? I've never heard of this Batman villain.
For me, like, there's not a whole lot of super great Maxi Zeus stories or anything like that, right? He's very clearly a D, perhaps even C level Batman villain, you know? I mean, in terms of, you don't even know him and you've played every Arkham game, which covers almost every Batman villain. So like, he's just crazy. He's just a crazy guy. Right. And I think
he's just a crazy guy.
The only thing he brings to the table is just like kind of that Adam West style camp.
Sure.
However, it is because this person is mentally ill, not because they just think it's more fun. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's kind of weird. I also don't really love this episode. I was just excited to talk to you about it because I think the concept for Maxi Zeus is absolutely bananas. And like belongs in like a comic like The Flash. But the fact that it exists in Batman is what's funny to me, because it's like,
yeah.
You think Bruce went home that night and Alfred's like, how'd it go tonight? And he's like, maybe we should go on a vacation and let Robin take care of things for a little bit.
He's like a human woman almost got killed by a guy that thought he was the god of thunder.
Fried his wife. Yeah, seriously.
According to the Wikipedia article for Maxi Zeus, it says that Maxi Zeus is a former Greek history teacher who started to suffer from insanity when he lost his wife. He became a criminal mastermind and uses cunning and intelligence to rise to power amidst the chaos in Gotham City's underworld. He has fought Batman on several occasions before being committed to the Arkham Asylum. So he has somewhat of a backstory. I mean, have you ever read a comic with Maxi Zeus?
Yeah, I've read the first appearance. I don't own it, but I've read it. There's some stuff in the 90s called, there's a little story called War of the Gods, which is Maxi Zeus and his gang doing stuff, which is, you know, it's got some fun 90s Batman art and things like that.
Okay.
For me, the most notable appearance in comics is in Arkham Asylum, A Serious House on a Serious Earth, which is written by Grant Morrison, where he is like, he is electrifying himself in the electric chair because he thinks it's giving him Olympian powers, which is just absolutely crazy. Like, it's so
that's
dark.
That's pretty cool, actually.
So maybe he'll be in Matt Reeves' The Batman Part 2. You never know.
I'm going to go ahead and say, nope, that's not happening. And Maxie Zeus, played by Kieran Culkin. Or
that would actually be great. That's great casting right there. You got a job in Hollywood, kid. Did you have a favorite?
Just get ready for the Kieran Culkin
facts or anything.
Let's see. What are my notes? So Mount Olympus, right? My notes. First note I wrote. Let's see if you can see that. What is happening is my first note. I just wrote what is happening.
That's good.
I love the shot of the Batwing flying around the tower. I love the ground up shot of like this tiny little thing that's like floating around the tower. I thought that was a really cool shot.
A lot of Batwing action lately. Big fan.
Also, shout out to Gargoyle Guns. Fucking metal.
Harpies.
Yeah. If I was ever a fucking billion trillion.
The Maxi Zeus hero click in the actual game generates those bystanders tokens and they just shoot things with machine guns, which is really funny. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. If I ever had more money than Jesus and I could, you know, pretend to be a Greek god, I would.
You kind of look like Maxi Zeus a little bit. You should be Maxi Zeus for Halloween.
Matt Reeves, call me.
Yeah, that would be tight.
Cameo.
Be in the Batman and he's like, we need an extra that is a guy that gets like absolutely elbowed in the face by Batman. Call me.
You to pretend that this electrical chair is giving you superhero powers.
Oh, sorry, we forgot to turn it off.
But yeah, dude, those gargoyle guns are fucking tight. I was like, man, that's the best advertisement for Simply Safe and Gotham that you could possibly ever come across.
Yeah. Oh man, I honestly, I'm coming up kind of empty on specific like images. I feel like I really dug the Batman like throwing the lightning bolt. I feel like that image is really cool because it also lightnings at that time. So I'll go with that for this one. But let's go ahead and talk about any fun facts if you had any.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I've got some trivia on this episode. Maxie's line, "Look on my works, ye mighty in despair," comes from Percy Bysshe Shelley's Ozymandias, a poem telling of human hubris.
Ozymandias in Watchmen. Yeah.
Ozymandias, also Breaking Bad. There's plenty of examples of that famous poem being used in fiction like this. So I think that's cool. Fittingly, Stavros is captured next to the Zorbas, which has Greek letters Omega and Alpha in the title. The name is derived from a novel called Zorba the Greek by Nikos Kazantzakis.
Nice job.
This one's interesting. It was released to VHS. This episode was released on VHS under the Adventures of Batman and Robin collection, more specifically on the one themed after Mr. Freeze, despite neither Robin nor Mr. Freeze appearing in this episode.
Just throw the Zeus episode in there.
That's some early 2000s, late 90s DVD home video. It's like coming to video or whatever. And it's like
see Batman and Robin take on Mr. Freeze. And also Maxi Zeus.
Yeah, it's like that was like a sticker on there. And also Maxi Zeus. That's funny as shit, man.
So one little factoid I wanted to talk to you about, not really a factoid specifically, but this kind of fits into this time in the show. Written by Paul Dini, co-written.
Yeah.
Kind of weird, right? A little smirch on his resume? You think Paul Dini saved the episode. You think he came in and actually punched it up.
I think Paul Dini went to Chipotle and had just the absolute worst diarrhea and was just sitting on the toilet. And he was like, this could be a good idea. And I think that what I'm trying to say is I think he phoned this one in.
Yeah. If anything, he might have punched up some of the dialogue about, you know, some stuff. If anything, he wrote the final scene, right? Where he's like,
sure.
He's like, there's Demeter, the goddess of the harvest. And Hermes. And,
beautiful.
You know, it's like,
beautiful piece of writing. But it's also, you're probably 100% right. It's like, what, maybe like it's contractually obligated at this point in the Batman, the animated universe canon. It's like, oh, we're going to have a scene at Arkham Asylum with all these bad heroes or bad villains or whatever. It's like, we got to get Dini. We got to get him.
Because like, Joker's not even talking, but it's a Joker scene. Get Dini on the horn. Get him on the phone.
Maybe his writing credit was just they called him up on a lunch break and they were like, yo, we want to put Joker in this. No Mark Hamill. We're just going to have him lean his face against the glass and lick it.
Yeah. So weird.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't talk about it much more than the surface level, but that ending sequence is beautiful.
I think, and this transitions into our next topic, I think that puts it firmly in tier C and keeps it out of the basement. That ending scene alone. That's where I fall.
Keeps it out of the basement. All right. I would actually agree with that, but I actually think that this episode is probably good enough to go toward the top of C. Unless you think it's like better than Tiger Tiger. I don't know.
It's definitely better than Tiger Tiger. Yeah. I think personally, I don't like it more than Mad as a Hatter. I think Mad Hatter is still a more interesting Batman villain that essentially is suffering from the same issues as Maxi Zeus here, but in a more theatrical way. I think the Alice in Wonderland stuff is always fun, as well as the concept of mind control and the Mad Hatter, like, hat having the microchips in it. That makes more sense to me than the guy, you know, thinking that he's Zeus. I know he's suffering from a mental episode, which, you know, obviously he's going to Arkham to get help and everything like that for that. But I think for me personally, as a Batman villain, Mad Hatter is a little stronger for me. So I wouldn't put it any higher than that. And I also think Night of the Ninja is cool. What is Reality is cool. Vendetta is cool. Like, I think all those movie or episodes I would prefer to watch. However,
yeah, I think you're spot on.
Yeah. Like, Agent Crime Doctor.
Nah. I remember that had some cool action sequences in it, but like this had like
Paging the Crime Doctor and this kind of have the same setup where it's like a pretty meh episode, but it has a great final scene. Paging the Crime Doctor's final scene is Bruce Wayne talks to Rupert Thorne's brother, who's a doctor that went to school with his dad, and he's like, what was my father about? And they like sit down and they're about to have that conversation that we don't get to see. In the same way that this has the Arkham scene at the end, but I feel like I prefer the Arkham scene. So
I agree.
It was merits alone.
So then
that's what I would do.
Yeah, I think the new number 51. I think that that's totally, totally, totally fair.
But yeah, I'd rather watch this than Mudslide, Birds of a Feather, Moon of the Wolf, like all those. Mudslide.
That's the worst
Fire
title.
From Olympus.
I think can we give that the worst title award, Mudslide?
Should we do the, yeah, that's fine.
Or we'll save that for the superlatives in the, when we finish
in the final.
In the final. Definitely. Okay, so then your new number 51 is Fire from Olympus.
Maxi Zeus would be proud. Kept himself out of the basement. Or Tartarus, as he says. I did like that he kept calling Batman Hades. I thought that was pretty cool.
Sure.
He's like, here's my dark brother, Hades.
Batman's like, my name's Batman.
He's like, what the fuck is this guy's problem? All right, our last episode is Read My Lips, written by Alan Burnett, Michael Reeves, and Joe Lansdale, and is directed by Boyd Kirkland. We already talked about Boyd Kirkland earlier. Longtime sequence director and episode director on Batman the Animated Series.
Yep.
Very cool. Alan Burnett is episode. One of the co-producers, co-creators. He also was the director... the executive producer on Mask of the Phantasm. So Alan Burnett's a big time household name for Batman the Animated Series fans as well. What did you think of this title card for Read My Lips?
I think it's very cool and ominous. Wasn't sure what I was getting into going into
it.
So
it's real freaky. Yeah. Yeah. I like it a lot. I think the font leaves a little bit to be desired. But the image itself is amazing, where it's like the grayscale setup with this creepy puppet hat or face with the, I love the knife just being stabbed in the workbench right there. Very cool. It's like a freaky Pinocchio.
Well, it's like you can't really even tell that it's like a head. It's just kind of like this block of something that's being like carved out. Like you can kind of picture There's like a little bit of like an indentation on the top left, but it doesn't, it, I don't see head when you see that.
Yeah, I think it, on your high resolution TV, it looks a little bit better, but
maybe let me zoom into this bad boy.
Zoom.
It's like a little bit of a nose, and there's like the E. Okay, got it. All right, cool. That checks out.
Right on. Plot synopsis, real quick. Here we go. An arena manager is robbed of the night's take after a high stakes boxing match. The thieves flee via roof access and another guy's style escape. They jump right off into a moving truck with mattresses.
Aim for the bushes.
They return to their hideout and fork the cash over to their boss, Scarface. Their gang is then shown to have pulled off two more excellent heists in the newspapers via Godfather style montage. Gordon and Batman, which Godron. I spelled this Godron. Gordon and Batman talk about how this gang is evading all police efforts. And then Gordon provides a tape of one of the escapes to Batman that somebody took on home video. At the Batcave, Batman enhances the tape to reveal a tattoo of one of the criminals and thus one of the gang members' identities. Which, by the way, discovering a criminal via tattoo, that's the second time I watched something like that this weekend. The other being a very momentous moment in my relationship. I showed Julia the town, and she loved it.
Oh, wow.
And that's a big feature in that movie. Congratulations.
When's the wedding?
Not soon enough.
Whose car are we taking?
But anyway, yeah. That's
Man,
it.
You
that's
had a we had a fucking busy weekend of content then. You watched that and Saltburn?
And Saltburn.
Yep. It's a murder on the dance floor.
Fucking wild movie. Would that save that for
wait
till
we talk about that shit
video
on the next episode.
Oh, man. So Batman finds this guy that the tattoo is associated to. His name is Rhino, or at least that's what he goes by. And Batman intimidates him. But Rhino gives up no info to Batsy. Batman then follows Rhino back to the hideout and overhears a conversation between Scarface and his number two, one Mr. Arnold Wesker. Batman then sees Scarface is a puppet, and all the gang goes along with taking orders from it as Arnold is working the puppet. It's the Muppet Show time! Scarface yells at the group and claims that there must be a rat amongst them because Batman was able to kind of get on to Rhino's trail. Otherwise, they weren't being followed before this. Later that night, Batman sneaks into Scarface's room right before the ventriloquist enters the room. Batman silently takes Arnold to the next room and demands to know where the evidence is from all the robberies that Scarface's gang pulled off. Ventriloquist tells Batman that Scarface never reveals any plans to him and that he's purely a bystander. Scarface then calls out for the ventriloquist, and Batman plants a bug and leaves. Back at the Batcave, Batman assesses that Arnold must have multiple personality disorder, where two minds exist in the same brain. Batman then talks about how he learned the art of voice throwing from Zatara, which is where you can make your voice or another voice seem that's coming from the other side of the room, but that the ventriloquist possesses something far more remarkable. Scarface then brings his gang on, lets them in on a platinum heist that they're going to pull that night, and he still suspects a rat amongst them. The gang uses the strongest acid ever to break into the hull of a transport ship, and they start loading platinum onto the most buoyant boat ever. Batman arrives on the scene and is deterred by a pile of falling platinum. He awakes in Scarface's hideout, and he is strung up by his arms. Batman tells Scarface that he had inside help from the ventriloquist. Scarface then turns on Arnold and begins to threaten him. And after Batman voice throws several verbal jabs at Scarface that sound as if they're coming from Arnold, they start to fight. Scarface orders his gang to kill the ventriloquist, but they all hesitate for obvious reasons. Batman escapes from his confines and disarms Scarface before going toe-to-toe with Rhino. In an attempt to shoot Batman, one of the gang members accidentally shoots Scarface into bits. The ventriloquist bawls over the destruction of his boss and friend. At Arkham, Arnold is working in the woodshop where the doctors say that his second personality has almost gone away after medical treatment. After they leave, Arnold is shown whittling a new puppet head and carves a scar right across the right cheek. Dun 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 dun. The first appearance of Scarface and the ventriloquist was Detective Comics number 583 in 1988, a book that I almost had. Alas, I do not. I do have the second appearance of Scarface, though, which is also the first appearance of Renee Montoya. So Scarface came out in the late 80s, early 90s as a prominent character, right in time for them to adapt and turn him into an episode of the show, which I think is pretty cool. We're starting to reach that time of the Batman mythos where like him and Bane and other people started to debut in the comics, and then they wanted to get them in the show, but they're not, you know, episodes in the same way that the Joker is, where there's a lot more content to derive from. So,
right.
Zach, what did you think of Puppet Godfather?
Puppet Godfather, man. This episode was interesting for me, where it's like, it starts out and I'm like, really? I was like, this is going to be the episode. And then they do a cool enough twist in the middle with like the whole interrogation of the guy and then figuring out with like the whole multiple personality disorder, where I was like, oh, okay.
So you were unfamiliar with the ventriloquist before this?
Totally unfamiliar. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I had no idea about this villain.
Hey, dummy.
Yeah. I liked, he's just berating this dude. Terrible, sad story, like, about this guy, like, just like roping himself into his own crime boss dealings. This is totally innocent dude, where he's like, he's got a dangerous second personality. The thing about this episode, though, it is ultimately unbelievable to me that the goons are going along with this.
Well, they question it throughout, right? They're like, There's a part where he starts talking to the ventriloquist, one of the goons, and then Scarface is like, hey, you don't talk to him, you talk to me. I'm the boss. He's the dummy. Got it? And the guy's like, yeah, sure, Mr. Scarface. And he's like, I think they're just afraid that the ventriloquist is going to kill them, right? Like, because this guy's clearly loose with the Tommy gun. So
I guess, but it's this frail old man. Just shoot him. Like,
I don't know, man. Gotham's a weird place.
Gotham is a weird place, but it's like, I just can't believe that he got a guy named Rhino. His name is Rhino.
He's a big boy. He's a big boy. He's
big,
like Gronk.
Boy.
Yeah.
Big boy Rhino. Big old motherfucker. And this dude is like carrying out the will for this goddamn puppet. It's like, it's just, it's unbelievable to me. It's total, like, I get you have to suspend your disbelief with stuff like this, but like, it's just ultimately to me, I just kept laughing to myself because I was like, imagine if you, it's different because it's animated, but this would never translate to live action. Imagine if it was like, you know, they scrapped the Batman Project 2 or whatever, they cast Barry Keoghan as the ventriloquist or whatever, or and Scarface. It's like, you would never take that seriously. It just wouldn't work at all in a live action sense. And so, I don't know. Too goofy bad guy for me. But it sounds like you knew about this character. I mean, obviously you had seen the episode before, but like, what were your thoughts on the episode?
Yeah, I mean, the ventriloquist is a Batman
Chiefs won
villain.
By the way, everything sucks. The world is awful. Everything sucks. Patrick Mahomes is gonna win another Super Bowl. He's probably going to beat the Lions, and the Lions are going to go to the Super Bowl because they're awesome, and everyone's going to be rooting for them, and Dan Campbell, and then the Chiefs are going to win, and everyone's going to fucking suck his dick off, and then Travis Kelce's going to retire a Super Bowl champion and go off and father many children with Taylor Swift. I'm so fucking mad, dude. It fucking sucks. It's, God damn it. Sorry. Go ahead. God,
I think you asked it.
Alexa,
asked it was...
turn the TV off. Thank you.
I think you asked if I was familiar with the ventriloquist before this, and I was. My first exposure to the ventriloquist is in the Batman Nightfall story arc in the 90s. So pretty soon after his first appearance time frame. I've always found Arnold Wesker to be an extremely like sympathetic inducing character for me, where I'm just like, man, you just really feel for this guy. But his other personality is fucking ruthless. He's just like, he's like got fucking James Gandolfini living in his body. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
seriously.
But he's just like, he can't help it. I think this episode's really funny, though. Like, I just think it's great.
It's goofy,
like
yeah.
The scene where he's like, hey, dummy, why is the window open? This isn't a meat locker. I'm cold. And it's just like, it's just a single image of this fucking puppet sleeping in this giant bed by himself.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good.
So, shout out to one of the hardest I've ever laughed in any episode of Batman the Animated Series is in this episode. So that gives this episode some bonus points for me.
For sure.
Is that I legitimately laughed so hard that I had to pause the episode because I was crying laughing. and that award goes to the moment when he's looking through the window at the top of the building and it pans over to the puppet, and the look of horror on Matt's face. He's sees like, this puppet. Yeah, it's that. It's literally that look, and it's like
horrified.
And they cut the credits. It's like, or cut to commercial, and I'm like, that was the cliffhanger. I lost it, dude. I was laughing so hard, I couldn't believe it. It's just, and it's the music sting. It's like, and he's like,
oh, I'm glad you brought up the music. I loved the fucking noir jazz that plays in the title card and throughout all the action scene. That is awesome. Like,
yeah, that was a note that I wrote down too.
Love that stuff. Like, it's like Public Enemies. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, really cool.
Totally. Yeah, I wrote that note down too. Is that like Rhino? They give Rhino a jazzy theme. Like when he walks away from the cops, it's like, he's like,
boom, 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 boom.
He's like,
when you're a jet, you're a jet.
It turns into a Broadway musical.
Yeah.
Dude, Batman the musical.
That's a great idea.
Have they done
If they did Batman the musical, I feel like the ventriloquist would be a perfect villain for that. Just like very low key. Yeah.
Must do research. I bet we could write a Batman musical that would actually
be. It'd be like Book of Mormon. It would just be like really fucking weird.
Did I tell you I'm seeing Book of Mormon?
Are you? Where?
Emily's dad got, as a Christmas gift for the family, they bought us all tickets to go see Book of Mormon at the Aronoff in Cincinnati. Really, it's coming later this summer.
Okay, cool.
I've never seen it before. I've never even listened to the
musical. I've never seen it either. Julia's seen it with her mom, really likes it. I've listened to it on Spotify on our road trip that we took. So funny. You're going to have a great time.
I'm excited. I got to tell you about Beetlejuice too. Like you would really enjoy Beetlejuice. Yeah. It was very good.
Did you have so is your favorite animation cell Batman's horrified face? Because mine is Scarface lying in bed looking at nothing and just being, I'm cold.
Yeah, I like that too. That's funny. But yeah, I mean, that takes the cake. The way that they animate Batman, just this horrified look. That's great.
So good. It's so funny.
Beautiful. That's cinema right there. That's cinema.
Cinema.
So yeah, I love that. I like the ending. I the last two episodes, the fucking Zeus in the Arkham Asylum, and then the ventriloquist in the Arkham Asylum. It's like that last shot of him like working on the thing in the workbench or whatever. I was like, that's kind of fucking chilling. Like even though it's this goofy
very
ass,
scary. Yeah,
it's this goofy ass episode. Like still like. The idea that they touched on, I mean, this episode came out in what? This was 1994?
I think this is 95.
95? So, like, thinking about, like, multiple personality disorder, I mean, at this point, remember that movie about multiple personalities with John Cusack? Remember that movie?
No, I was thinking of Split, though.
Split, sure.
M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, when I think of multiple personality, the first I think of is that it's a John Cusack movie with the mental patient that's got like the eyes that like jitter back and forth. We saw that shit in like Mr. McCartney showed that to us in like history class for whatever reason. He was like, he was probably fucking hungover, and he's
this
like,
came
"Hey
out
kids,
in May
we're gonna
of 1993." I misspoke.
Okay, so 1993, and you're talking about multiple personality disorder on a kids program. I mean, that's. I know that they probably didn't take it as seriously as we do now, because we have many cases now of that actually being a legitimate mental health issue. But like back then, still like bringing that into, you know, bringing that into the conversation, you got to give it points for that, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though it's about a ventriloquist guy that's creating a mob boss, not necessarily painting it in the best light.
Let me pitch you on an idea. In a perfect world, a Batman movie that features the ventriloquist only as a villain, I think would be like a Robert Eggers movie where it's still our Pat's Batman, but it's Willem Dafoe plays the ventriloquist.
Oh man.
And they yeah.
Yeah, I'm in.
Spooky, like a little unsettling, you know what I mean?
I feel like it would work. Why'd you spill your beans?
why'd you open the door, dummy? Norman's sabbatical, honey.
I could see Willem Dafoe playing that.
Absolutely crushing it as the ventriloquist. Oh, yeah. Maybe Matt Reeves is listening. He'll cast him in there. Get our Pats and him reunited. That'd be pretty cool.
Maybe. You've heard the rumors for the Batman Part 2, right?
What rumors?
The strong rumors right now about the early writing process and the script is that they're going to be featuring Hush.
Oh, that's a good idea. Tommy Elliott. Huh. Shocked they're not going with the Joker, but I'm here for it.
Well, the Joker will be in it, and you can't not, especially now that Barry After Keoghan big, is big like Barry a big Summer. Star. Now. Yeah. Yeah. The Eternals didn't break him, but Saltburn sure did.
Yeah. I kind of like the idea, though, that Barry Keoghan's Joker in the Batman universe is just essentially like a person that Batman goes to visit at Arkham all the time and that he never gets out. I think that'd be interesting. But of course, he's gonna
get out. Yeah,
he's gonna. Everyone wants it. I get it. He's gonna get out.
And he's gonna he's gonna run around naked to murder on the dance floor or whatever. It's like Barry Keoghan's Joker is his big fat fucking cock just flopping. Massive.
Well, yeah, done. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for you, Barry. Share some of the love. Come on. us little people down here need some help.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's huge. It's the
it's the biggest cock. It's great. It's everyone's got great. The big balls too.
I think for me, like, I just want the Joker to be part of a Batman finale for a trilogy. So if they're doing three movies, cool. I'd prefer that Barry is the main antagonist of the last one, not the second one.
Yeah, that's actually
because I think
idea.
That's a big thing with The Dark Knight Rises. It's always hard to follow a Joker story. Always happened with Batman Returns. Hard to follow Jack Nicholson. You know, I just feel like maybe you just save that bullet for to bring it home. You know, and do more of a Hush type thing. That'd be really cool, featuring a lot of the other villains. So, love that idea though. Zach, you got any fun facts for me?
Not many for this episode, but I'm still going to read a couple of these. So, DC wanted the ventriloquist to be a rather poor ventriloquist, mangling his pronunciations when speaking as Scarface, as he is in the comics. Paul Dini felt it would hamper the voice actor's performance and talked him out of it. So I don't know how, like, in the terms of the ventriloquist, they like they're a big stutter or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
He just kind of stutters quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, again, going off that,
like, even more meek than he is in the show.
Going off that, unlike most versions of Scarface, this version doesn't have the distinct characteristic of mispronouncing words with the letter B. Due to the ventriloquist's inability to throw his voice in B sounds, instead substituting it for G and G sounds,
the Gatman,
Gatman, Gad, G, Glackmail, and so on.
Yep.
In the audio commentary on the Batman the Animated Series Volume 3 DVD, Bruce Timm stated that the setting of Wesker's lair, which is filled with mannequins, is inspired by Stanley Kubrick's Killer Kiss from 1955, where a climactic fight scene takes place in a warehouse filled with mannequins.
Spooky.
So,
it's a cool looking
inspiration
lair.
From the greats there, Stanley Kubrick.
Heard of him.
Somewhat famous dude.
Yeah, that's what they say. All right, time to rank this and move on with our lives.
Well, I'm going to actually ask you, do you have any strong opinions on this one? Because I really don't. I don't know where I want to put this. Like,
yeah, I like it quite a bit. I think it's not... For me, this is this goes back to what you mentioned earlier, which is how we used to be like more or less than... Thanks. And I think, like, Scarface gun to my head, I feel like I still prefer On Leather Wings to this, but I feel like this is a really strong episode. Like, it's got a nice consistent tone all the way through. It's funny. It's got some cool action, great music. Like, the Shirley Walker score is excellent, especially with the influx of that jazz kind of stuff. So I'm thinking like high B.
I think I'm with you. I also would go below On Leather Wings. I liked his Silicon Soul better than this.
Okay.
I just thought that the concept they wrestle with are a little bit better than this one. I might say, like, Fear of Victory is a sports gambling one, right?
Yes.
Somewhere around there feels appropriate. I don't know. Maybe Be a Clown has Joker, which is cool. I mean, that adds an element. This one, I was just not super compelled by the villain. I get that the ventriloquist is a cool concept, but, like, executed in this episode, just kind of like, eh, for me. I don't know. What do you think? Yeah. Like, better than Feet of Clay? Better than Vertigo?
I don't think it's better than Vertigo or Feet of Clay. I think the only reason why Off Balance is as high as it is because of the Talia stuff, which I think is really good.
Sure.
Vertigo as a villain is rather weak, but he gave us a really good meme. I would probably go 36. I like this more than Be a Clown and Terror in the Sky, which is the second Man Bad episode.
Okay.
But I don't think it's better than the Clayface introduction. I think that's still a really cool horror monster movie kind of you reap what you sow story. Whereas this is more of just like, this guy's crazy and has a puppet that is a gangster, which
this
is fun.
This guy's crazy.
It's a fun pitch. I mean, like,
it is a fun pitch.
It makes for really interesting, like, content in the Batman world, you know?
Let's put it this way. There will never, ever, ever be a universe in which we get a film version of the Ventriloquist. It's just not going to happen. We could joke about it. It's not
I think it'll
happen.
I don't think he'll be the main villain, though.
I just don't think
it'll
this
be
translate
like,
to the...
Somebody's going to be like, in the same way that they're like, what if Colin Farrell was the Penguin? Someday someone's going to be like, what if Zac Efron was the Ventriloquist?
Oh my God.
Like, it's just like a...
They should have Zac Efron play Bane.
That's a good idea, actually. It's a really good idea. Damn.
Yeah, I'm full of them.
I like that. I still want Jeremy Allen White as Harvey.
That would be awesome.
Yes, chef.
God, that would be awesome. That'd be so fucking awesome.
Flip the coin,
oh,
chef.
Oh, fuck.
Get the fuck off my DA stand now.
Get the fuck off my expo line now, chef.
But yeah, so I kind of land around 30, 36, 37, but I'm kind of indifferent. I agree with you. I like the Silicon Soul, Off Balance, and Feet of Clay more.
I would probably... Yeah, I would say anywhere between 36 and 37 is fine. I don't know. Like, I would say either it's the new 36 or the new 37. What do you think?
So Terror in the Sky is Man Bat's wife accidentally is becoming Man Bat.
I think so.
That is pretty cool. It's a cool fight scene in the air. Remember Batman fights those guys on the plane? Or no, she turns into Man Bat on the plane and just yeets herself out. Yeah. And the Batwing has that super long extendo arm where it closes the door, which fucking
it goes,
United Airlines could have used that a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Alaska,
sorry. Let's go with 37. In a row?
In a row?
What do you think?
I'm down.
All right.
What's
new
this
number
one called?
37. Read my lips. Dummy.
Hey, dummy.
What if you were Scarface for Halloween and I was the ventriloquist and I just put my hand up your shirt all night? And you got like a SIG hanging out and a little
a
toy Tommy
idea.
Gun, and you're wearing like a pinstripe suit. That'd be fun.
It's actually not a bad Halloween idea. Yeah.
Please, Mr. Scarface, don't make me drink this shot again. Do it, you idiot.
I'm wood here. If I would, I could, but I can't because I'm wood.
That was another line that he said. I'm talking here.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the ventriloquist. What a wild guy. All right. So yeah. new number 37.
New number 37. And E-tier. Let me just say, I think I missed having three episodes that were just kind of all over the place.
None of them are connected.
Yeah, this was a fun little episode because I didn't feel like it was like a two-parter where it's like this long story. I liked each episode. It was cool. It was nice to be back in this kind of a groove.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm glad you feel that way because we have a similar thing for the next couple of weeks. Again, because there's no two-parters or anything like that. And a lot of the mixes, the way the math just kind of worked out for our episode schedule, there's some weird triple features here. But on our next episode of Radio Vision, we'll be covering three new episodes: The Worry Men, Sideshow, and A Bullet for Bullock, which is a little promo for you. A Bullet for Bullock is an Emmy-winning episode of Batman the Animated Series. So
really,
pretty cool. Indeed.
And we're going to be having are we able to reveal the special guest?
Yes, Mark will be returning. He loves Harvey Bullock. We wanted to have him come back, guest appear. So very excited to have him come back. We'll get our little Trinity going together, and we'll talk about those three episodes on our next installment of Radio Vision.
Fucking A.
Zach, thank you for joining me as always. He's at Zach Rotello. I'm at Naj and the Parker. If you like this show and you want to listen to some of the other episodes, you can also go and listen to our most recent episode of Radiovania, which was us talking about the year 2023. And also be on the lookout for our next installment of that coming soon. Hopefully we'll talk about some Last of Us remaster, some Saltburn, all kinds of fun stuff going
on. A year late, but yeah. We're talking about it now.
Hey, but people want to hear what we have to say. You know what I mean? So,
just how much did they like Barry Keoghan's cock?
How much time? We have to put a cap, I think, on how much time we're allowed to spend on that.
Yeah. We got to circumcise our time well. I mean, use our time well. I mean.
Anyway, but if you like all that stuff, go to radiovania.com and check us out there. Go to YouTube and search for Radiovania to check out some of the videos. And if you want to send us Saltburn related questions,
yeah,
send it to radiovisionshow@gmail.com. No explicit images allowed, please. Just because. But you know, if you want to do it, just put a little warning in the subject matter there.
Yeah, if you put NSFW in the subject line, you can put whatever you want in the body. Perfect. I mean, whatever you want in the body.
What, like a lot of stuff in that movie, pretty wild. But yeah, send that to radiovania show@gmail.com. Zachary, thank you for being the Scarface to my ventriloquist. I'm the dummy. You're the brains of the organization. We all know this.
Oh, I don't know about that. I feel like if anyone, you've got your hands right up my rectum. So exactly. I just feel like, yeah.
Working you like a puppet. Yeah. But thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun doing this little side passion project that has turned into a really fun, consistent way that I could spend time with my buddy and other friends and talk about really cool character, a little guy called Batman. Hopefully his popularity takes off because of this podcast. You know, I think that'd be really cool for the brand.
Yeah, maybe one day they'll start making movies and, you know, he's like primed to explode.
Yeah, but until that time, we will enjoy reviewing every episode of Batman, the animated series. Join us again next time. Same bat podcast, same bat podcast feed. Good night.